Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, September 19th, 2017. Let's begin by reading some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, University of Illinois, Provost meetings go ahead. First of four candidates will meet public today. This article is written by Julie Wirth and is based out of Urbana. The Dean of the University of Illinois' Engineering College says the number one job of the next campus provost is to protect the breadth and depth of the school's academic enterprise. College of Engineering Dean Andreas Congellaris, that's C-A-N-G-E-L-L-A-R-I-S, is one of four finalists for the provost job, the top academic post on campus. Illinois has had an interim provost for the past 2 years. Congellaris and three external finalists announced earlier this month will give public presentations on campus this week, starting at 4 p.m. today with Sunny Ramaswamy, that's Sunny, S-O-N-N-Y, R-A-M-A-S-W-A-M-Y, Director of the National Institute of Food and Agriculture at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Then there's also, Ramaswamy, declined to talk with the News Gazette before his on-campus interview. The two other candidates have yet to respond. Chaden, that's C-H-A-D-E-N, Jalali, D-J-A-L-A-L-I, Dean of the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences at the University of Iowa, and Joan Ferrini-Mundy, that's Joan, and then F-E-R-R-I-N-I-M-U-N-D-Y, Chief Operating Officer for the National Science Foundation. Asked why he is interested in the job, Congellaris said there are few comparable jobs in higher education. The answer is actually very simple. This is the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, he said Monday. It is an honor, and I'm very excited about it, because I know how strong the university is, how resilient it is, and how much more resilient it can become as it takes advantage of not only that reputation, but more important, its potential, said Congellaris, a U of I faculty member since 1997 and engineering dean since 2013. Illinois students are among the brightest in the country and the world, he said. They come here only for one reason, the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. The provost's most important job is to ensure that the comprehensiveness of this university, which is the most important asset that this university has, is maintained. Its excellence is maintained, he said. Equally important, given higher education's funding struggles, is that the campus remains accessible to every qualified student in the state of Illinois, he said. Congellaris declined to comment further until after his interview on Thursday. At Monday's campus academic senate meeting, Chancellor Robert Jones again encouraged faculty and others to attend the presentations or watch them via a live stream being made available on campus. He said he was pleased with the quality and diversity of the candidates, noting that all four came out of the academic side of the house, although two have been at federal agencies in recent years. English professor Siobhan, S-I-O-B-H-A-N, Somerville, S-O-M-E-R-V-I-L-L-E, asked about the emphasis on scientists and engineers in the search, wondering how are you planning to ensure the representation of all parts of the university at the campus level. Jones noted that Ramaswamy, an entomologist by training, has an agricultural background, Congellaris is an electrical engineer, Jalali is a physicist, and Ferrini Mundi holds a doctorate in mathematics education. Jones said the finalists were recommended to him by the search committee, which drew from a very large and broad pool of candidates. The committee was led by College of Law Dean Vikram Amar. That's Vikram, V-I-K-R-A-M, Amar, A-M-A-R. The job description talked about folks who had the scholarship, record, and experience to lead this great research university, Jones said. There were people with all kinds of backgrounds. The next headline reads, University of Illinois Faculty Senate adopts changes spawned by cultural studies shift. Some still call for revamping Gen Ed. This article is also written by Julie Wirth and is based out of Urbana. Campus senators have approved a measure clarifying general education requirements for University of Illinois students following the adoption of a revised cultural studies requirement last year. General education requirements are core courses that all students must take in science, the humanities, social sciences, writing, quantitative reasoning, and cultural studies, designed to give them a broad background beyond their own majors. Currently, students have to take one course designated as quote-unquote Western culture, and one that is either a quote-unquote non-Western culture or a quote-unquote U.S. minority culture course. Under the new requirements starting next fall, they will have to take all three. The original general education requirements were adopted in 1989, but never fully implemented, faculty members said Monday. For example, they called for students to take 9 hours, usually three classes, each in three categories: natural science and technology, humanities and the arts, and behavioral and social sciences. But in practice, the campus has been requiring only 6 hours, two classes in each of those categories, presumably because students in engineering, business, or some education programs simply don't have time to take that many general education courses and still finish their degrees in 4 years, Professor said. We have never aligned current practice with what we had hoped, Professor Gay Miller, chair of the Senate's Educational Policy Committee, said at another meeting last week. The 1989 requirements are followed in composition and languages, Professor said. The measure approved Monday recognizes what is done in practice, setting the 6-hour minimum requirements campus-wide and allowing individual academic departments to add more if desired, said computer science professor Greg Zilles, Z-I-L-L-E-S, former chairman of the campus general education board. Students will have to take 9 hours of cultural studies, but many of those courses fulfill requirements in other categories too, such as art, history, or sociology, Professor said. One senator last week suggested a comprehensive review of general education requirements, though he conceded it would be brutally hard and complicated and political to try to change this. We keep tweaking it, extending it, adding things, said education professor Nicholas Bourboules, that's B-U-R-B-U-L-E-S, adding that some people feel the requirements create roadblocks to students who want to double major. Zillis said, after Monday's meeting, that other faculty members have complained about the requirements, but they don't really agree on what needs to be changed. I think the bigger challenge is actually communicating to students why these are important, he said. This is part of being an educated person. It's difficult to always anticipate what it is that you're going to need later in life. And in many cases, even for technical disciplines, having this non-technical aspect is important for your career and life. Also Monday, the Senate approved reducing the number of hours required for a minor in history from 21 to 18 hours to make it more accessible to students and majors with many required courses. Now let's take a quick moment to look at our weather forecast provided by Greg Soulet, that's S-O-U-L-J-E, and his column on the weather front. All right, so for today, 86, partly sunny, a shower and thunderstorm in spots before noon and again in the afternoon. Overnight, partly cloudy. Wednesday, the high will be 87, the low will be 65, mostly sunny and humid. Overnight, fair. Thursday, the high will be 90 degrees, the low is 67, and it's partly cloudy and humid. Friday, the high is 89, the low is 66, it will be partly cloudy. Autumnal equinox is at 3:02 p.m. Saturday, the high is 88, the low is 65, and it will be mostly sunny. The next headline reads, Immigrant Welcome Awards, Validation. DACA recipient guided other undocumented students at U of I. This article is written by Marcus Jackson and is based out of Champaign. When she transferred to the University of Illinois from Harper College in the fall of 2016, Nancy Ramirez Blancas was classified as an undocumented immigrant student. That meant being charged out-of-state tuition, being screened for additional vaccinations, and no access to financial aid. Never mind the fact that she moved to the U.S. from Mexico when she was a year old and went to Buffalo Grove High School in the school district where she and her family lived. As a result, she had to tackle a mountain of paperwork that caused unnecessary headaches. I was shuffling from the financial aid office to administrative offices to McKinley Health Center, all of these different places just to fix that, Ramirez Blancas said. I had to put together over 100 pages of documents just to prove I was an Illinois resident. After months, the issues were straightened out, and she was even reimbursed the extra tuition costs she incurred as a result of being marked as an out-of-state student. But Ramirez Blancas figured if she was dealing with these issues, plenty of others on campus were dealing with them too, and she wanted to help. During the 2016-17 school year, she became the president of a group called Illinois Coalition Assisting Undocumented Students Education, or ICAUSE, C-A-U-S-E, which serves as an advocate for undocumented students at the University of Illinois. A newly minted recognized student organization, ICAUSE, has worked with dozens of undocumented students in the past year, and for her work with them, Ramirez Blancas will be honored with the Student Leadership Award at the 4th Annual Immigrant Welcome Awards on Saturday. As one of approximately 800,000 recipients of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, DACA, Ramirez-Blancas felt it was her responsibility to assist other students at the U of I who faced challenges similar to the ones she faced upon arriving on campus. "I've gone through so many struggles just to be here, and it's at the point where I want to be equally represented like everybody else and be able to graduate," she said. "A lot of effort goes into doing everything we do, and to be recognized for that validates our cause, and it really helps us moving forward in hopes that the university will make it better for future undocumented students. In the year since its inception, ICAUSE and its members are starting to make a difference for DACA students at the U of I." Seeing her take the initiative to create a resolution and to be a part of the immigration process really inspired me and motivated me to be a part of it, said Daisy Cordelia, a U of I senior and ICAUSE member. "I realized that although I am not undocumented myself, we need to protect human rights and protect students who are just trying to seek higher education." Since ICAUSE got to work, more and more undocumented students at the U of I have come forward to ask for help in getting similar issues resolved. "They are first generation, so they don't know the resources they have," Cordelia said. "We've been seeing more people come out to say they are DACA and how we can help them." A senior this year, at the U of I, Ramirez-Blancas, a psychology and pre-law major, hopes to go to law school so that she can one day become an immigration attorney to continue advocating for undocumented citizens in the future. "Our efforts are to teach the community, try to change some of those laws and policies to better help DACA students graduate from the university," she said. And as a quick follow-up to that, Honor Roll. From 2 to 4 p.m. Saturday, the 4th Annual Immigrant Welcome Awards will be handed out at Urbana's Muslim American Society Center, which is located at 2011 Brownfield Road. Between now and then, we'll profile each of those winners. So first, Nancy Ramirez-Blancas, Student Leadership; Sam Smith, Humanitarian Relief; Charles Larenas, that's L-A-R-E-N-A-S, Distinguished Leadership Service; Carol Wackerlin, that's K-A-R-Y-L, Wackerlin, W-A-C-K-E-R-L-I-N, for Human Rights, and the Education Justice Project and Immigration Project for Community Impact. And quickly, to also follow up on the previous headline that I read, the provost meetings, here are the other times that the provosts are scheduled to speak if you're interested in learning more about that. So again, the final four. The first of four finalists in the running for the top academic post on campus will share his plans for the position in a public presentation at 4 p.m. today, or her plans for the position. Here's a lineup of candidates to become the U of I's first permanent provost since Elisanmi Adesida, yes, that's right, A-D-E-S-I-D-A was his last name, resigned 2 years ago. First up, as we mentioned, Sunny Ramaswamy, Director, National Institute of Food and Agriculture, U.S. Department of Agriculture, speaking at 4 p.m. today in the Levis Center on the third floor. Next up will be Andreas Kondylaris, Dean of the College of Engineering of the University of Illinois, and he will speak at 4 p.m. Thursday at the Knight Auditorium in Spurlock Museum. The next up will be Chaden, C-H-A-D-E-N, Jalali, that's D-J-A-L-A-L-I, Dean, College of Liberal Arts and Sciences from the University of Iowa. He will speak at 4 p.m. September 28th in the Knight Auditorium in Spurlock Museum. And also, lastly, Joan Farini-Mundi. She's the Chief Operating Officer for the National Science Foundation. She will be speaking at 4 p.m. on October 11th in the Knight Auditorium in Spurlock Museum. The next headline reads, Free Speech Lawsuit. Man receives $15,000 settlement for arrest after burning U.S. flag. This article is written by Ben Zigderman and is based out of Urbana. An Urbana man who was arrested and detained for 5 hours on Independence Day 2016 after posting a picture of himself burning an American flag on Facebook the night before will receive $15,000 as part of a settlement reached in a federal civil rights lawsuit he filed in January. Brighton Mellott, M-E-L-L-O-T-T, 22, who was represented by the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union of Illinois, and the Schiff Hardin Law Firm, will also receive $20,000 for attorney's fees in the settlement of his lawsuit against four members of the Urbana Police Department who arrested him under Illinois' 1989 flag desecration law, which the U.S. Supreme Court ruled unconstitutional that same year. In June, U.S. District Court Judge Colin Bruce ruled that burning a flag was constitutionally protected free speech and allowed the case to continue. At that point, it was just a matter of reaching a settlement that both sides could agree with and that we thought would send a message to law enforcement about the enforcement of the statute. Rebecca Glenberg, G-L-E-N-B-E-R-G, an attorney for the ACLU of Illinois, told WDWS Radio. The Urbana Police Department and the officer's attorney were unavailable for comment Monday after the announcement of the settlement. The defendants named were officers Kenneth Sprague, S-P-R-A-G-U-E, Jeremy Hale, H-A-L-E, Matthew McElho, M-C-E-L-H-O-E, and Andrew Charles. Glenberg also called on the Illinois General Assembly to repeal the state's flag desecration law. It's really a shame that the statute is still on the books when the Supreme Court has held repeatedly that burning the flag is protected by the First Amendment, and it was the fact that the statute still exists that led these police officers to mistakenly arrest our client for burning a flag, Glenberg said. In a statement, Mellett said he was pleased with Bruce's ruling that his actions were protected. While this is a fact the police department already or should have already known, I certainly hope that they have learned from their mistake, he said. In January, Mellett said he burned the flag to address the issue of gun violence in our country that has existed needlessly and without intervention, and to address the issue of violence brought against members of my queer community and against every community considered to be, quote-unquote, other. He also referenced the June 12, 2016 shooting massacre at a gay nightclub in Orlando, Florida, where 49 people were killed. Specifically, that's what made me think about this post, Mellett said then. That was what inspired a lot of the text that I had included with the picture. The day after Mellett's arrest, Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Reitz said he would not be charged and acknowledged that the Illinois statute contradicted a 1989 U.S. Supreme Court ruling. At the time of Mellett's arrest, Urbana Police said in a statement that they were concerned about the possibility of violence because of the volume of responses and specificity of threat against his place of employment, said the Savoy Walmart. And now, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Jim Rosso. I'm happy to announce that our second class of high school confidential correspondence is coming together. To recap, last year, we invited one budding journalist from each area high school to contribute weekly in these pages and at newsgazette.com. The students went above and beyond in a project that won both state and national awards. Year two of High School Confidential starts Wednesday. We'll introduce the hardworking correspondents throughout the school year as they report on what's happening in their hallways. And now let's take a look at our online audience. What was trending last week at newsgazette.com, which in a seven-day period ending Sunday saw 1,120,405 page views. The three top stories were, 1, Danville School's food director accused of stealing thousands from district. 2, neighbor, targets of KKK flyer hoax have moved out of house. 3, prison for Fairmount man convicted of aggravated DUI. The three top sports stories were, 1, high school football scoreboard, from September 15th and 16th, 2017. 2, Illini land 2018 Texas quarterback. And 3, special delivery for Illini basketball. The three top videos are, 1, McGee looking into the future. 2, prep football 2017 week 4 helmet stickers. And 3, Smith, need to go on the road and win. The three top photo galleries were, 1, the CU Pride Parade 2017. 2, ZZ Top at the Virginia Theater. And 3, high school volleyball between the teams St. Thomas More versus Muhammad Seymour. Now let's take a look at area history. From 1917, 8 alleged bootleggers were in the clutches of the law following a series of afternoon raids. Among those arrested was Colonel A.C. Stagner, S-T-A-G-N-E-R, who allegedly operated a semi-roadhouse near Homer Park. He was nabbed while waiting to leave town on a train. In 1967, calling the University of Illinois student code a relic of the 30s that is outdated in language and application, Dean of Students Stanton Millett announced 3 code changes. Perhaps the biggest eliminated the regulation that forbid undergraduate women from visiting any house in which men live unless accompanied by a chaperone. In 2002, two top staffers for U.S. Representative Tim Johnson, representative from Urbana, a Republican from Urbana, excuse me, were held up at gunpoint and abducted, but foiled their abductors in a shootout at the Longworth House office building. The abductors were arrested by Capitol Police and the staffers emerged unharmed. Chief of Staff Jerry Clark and Legislative Director Eric Warman were sitting on the front porch of their apartment on Maryland Avenue, northeast corner, I believe, at about 2:15 a.m. when they were approached by two men asking for a light. When they told the men they didn't have a light, the men pulled out guns and demanded money. Warman turned over his wallet. The men then took Clark and Warman at gunpoint to a Jeep Cherokee parked a block away. And in international history, today's highlight, on September 19th, 1777, the First Battle of Saratoga was fought during the Revolutionary War. Although British forces succeeded in driving out the American troops, the Americans prevailed in a second battle the following month. And now, MJ's Minute, Marcus Jackson's weekly Q&A with a mover and shaker. MJ's Minute with Brad Allen. It's homecoming week in Tuscola, and everybody has the fever, including Principal Brad Allen. Allen, in his seventh year at Tuscola, was decked out in a red, white, and blue tie for America Monday, just one of the many themes at the school this week. Allen, 50, spent the previous 12 years at St. Joseph Ogden, where he was the head baseball coach, in addition to helping out the football and boys' basketball staffs. Allen welcomed our Marcus Jackson into his office to talk all things homecoming and Tuscola ahead of Friday's showdown between the unbeaten Warriors and Central A&M. To view the video of their full conversation, please visit www.newsgazette.com. And here's the one question for Brad Allen. What makes homecoming week so special in Tuscola? I would say it's sort of unique in the fact that you get the entire community and extended community involved, anywhere from our kids being involved in daily competitions, which you see across the nation. On Saturday, we have a Hall of Fame banquet, Tuscola graduates coming in and participating in that. We have a big turnout at the Friday night football game, which is the focal point of the whole week. The next headline reads, just what the doctor ordered. Teen's ailing mom gets lift to see son win at state fair. This article is written by Marcus Jackson and is based out of Tolono. And the headline is battling cancer. Duncan Hughes, that's D-U-N-C-A-N, Hughes, H-U-G-H-E-S, has dazzled judges this year, collecting blue ribbons at the Champaign County 4-H Dog Show and at the Illinois State Fair in dog obedience for his handling of 10-year-old Black Labrador Buck. But Duncan's mom, Sarah Hughes, says handling Buck isn't her 14-year-old son's lone talent. He's really good at the piano, Sarah Hughes said. I prefer the guitar, Duncan snapped back. When he was 5 or 6, he was pounding out Christmas melodies by ear, his mom said. It brings great joy to Hughes to see her children, who include 11-year-old Mason and 9-year-old Shelby, thriving in their chosen activities. But it has been especially uplifting these past few years as Hughes has battled leukemia. And as Duncan and Buck were wowing crowds in June en route to winning the Champaign County competition held at Urbana's Dog Training Club, Hughes was right there cheering them on. But after a month-long stay at Chicago's Northwestern Memorial Hospital, in which she received a bone marrow transplant, Hughes thought it would be impossible to watch her boys compete at the state fair competition. For starters, being around so many kids and dogs for an extended period of time wasn't advisable, her doctors told her. She had a few things working in her favor, though, such as the state competition being held close to home at the same site as the Champaign County competition instead of the state fairgrounds in Springfield. And little did she know, her husband Jerry and some friends were colluding behind the scenes to find a way to make sure she could be there for Duncan and Buck. I didn't plan on going, Hughes said. But Jerry had a friend who lives nearby pick Sarah up shortly before Duncan and Buck were to be on center stage, drive her to the competition, mask covering her face and all, in time to see them perform for the judges. I was so excited, and they dragged me right back out of there and back home right away, she said. Duncan, adopted by Jerry and Sarah Hughes 2 days after he was born in December 2002, was thrilled to see his mom. It feels pretty good to see her there, he said. I knew she was coming. The good news is mom's feeling better since being released from Northwestern, where she says she was spoiled rotten in her penthouse suite with 7 windows in the middle of downtown Chicago. Impressive accommodations notwithstanding, Hughes was eager to get home to Jerry and the kids on their farm in rural Champaign County. I get the same treatment here. The kids have really grown this summer, she said. Duncan immediately stepped up to the plate as a 14-year-old and has done exceptionally well taking care of me and the kids. It's no wonder Duncan is so good with Buck and the other animals on the Hughes farm, including a horse he plans to show in future competitions. Daily, after watering on the farm, mucking and throwing hay, Duncan is homeschooled by his parents throughout the course of the day. His free time is spent with the animals. "I work with Buck, and I like working with my horse," he said. "He's so good with the animals. He's got such a gentle spirit," Jerry Hughes said. "That's why he and Buck get along so well." It has also come in handy when it comes to taking care of Mom, who expects to be cancer-free soon after another round of oral chemotherapy in the next few weeks. One thing that's certainly helping is Duncan's smile, the same one he had at 2 days old when he became a member of the Hughes family with chubby cheeks and a head full of hair. One of his siblings said this morning, "When Duncan smiles, it brightens the whole room," Sarah said. "And when he laughs, it's right from the belly. He's really great." "I don't know what they're talking about," Duncan said. He may try to hide his soft side behind his tough teenage exterior, but his actions, whether it be with his mom, Buck, or the other animals, prove otherwise. "He's very compassionate, very helpful, and he really likes to help out," Jerry says. "He's really stepped up as the oldest in the family at home, and that's been great." The next headline reads, "Federal lawsuit. $5 million awarded to siblings shot by Chicago officer." This article is written by the Associated Press and is based out of Chicago. Three members of one family have been awarded nearly $5 million by a federal jury that concluded a Chicago police officer used excess force when he shot them while investigating gunfire. The jury on Monday awarded Michael Williamson $2.1 million in damages, his younger brother, Princeton, $1.65 million, and their sister, Kiera, K-I-E-R-R-A, $1 million. The Chicago Tribune reported the wounding of the three occurred on New Year's 2014 when police alleged the brothers fired a gun in the air, which was heard and investigated by Officer Wilfredo Ortiz. The next headline reads, "Northern Illinois, tollway worker stuck, killed by semi near Chicago." This article is based out of ALSIP and is written by the Associated Press. An Illinois tollway worker has been struck and killed by a semi-trailer truck traveling on Interstate 294 south of Chicago. Authorities say the driver of the semi drove off after sideswiping the worker and his vehicle on Monday afternoon. Illinois State Police say the 48-year-old worker was struck as he was picking up debris on the right shoulder of the southbound lanes of I-294 in ALSIP. The Cook County Medical Examiner's Office did not release the victim's name. Tollway officials say they will not release any personal information about the worker pending notification of his family. The next headline reads, "Monticello Theater Association, women wanted for new production." This article is based out of Monticello and is written by Melissa Murley. The auditions for the drama 12 Angry Women will be at 7 p.m. Monday and next Tuesday at the Monticello Theater Association Theater. Women aged 15 to 75 are encouraged to audition on either night. There will be readings from the script. No memorized monologues are necessary. The production is being directed by Carrie Brocksmith, that's B-R-O-C-K-S-M-I-T-H, with assistance from Ted Nolan, N-O-W-L-I-N. The performances will be on November 11th, 12th, 17th, 18th, and 19th. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been the reading of Part 1 of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, September 19th, 2017. We thank you very much for listening, and we hope you have a wonderful day. Stay tuned next for Part 2 of the News Gazette coming up shortly. Thanks again. Have a good day.